This is WMUK's Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for joining me. Tonight, my guest is Joseph Lin, violinist with the Juilliard String Quartet. This renowned music group from New York City will perform on the Fontana Series Friday at Kalamazoo College's Stetson Chapel. Fontana has designated this concert its annual Jacob and Naomi Stuckey Memorial Concert. I spoke with Joseph Lin earlier this month in between Mr. Lin's rehearsals and teaching Juilliard students. Joseph, first of all, it's a real pleasure to talk to you today.
It's a pleasure for me, Kara. Thank you.
I know that I'm catching you in between a lot of things. You joined the Juilliard String Quartet in 2011, and it's not just a quartet kind of career. It's also you joined the faculty at the Juilliard School as well. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
How are your days spent between practicing for professional performances and teaching young people to become professional performers?
That's a good question. Any given day might be different, but if you took a look at, say, a week or a month, our time is roughly divided half and half between time devoted to rehearsing and performing in the quartet, and the other half being time devoted to working with our students. But I would say on an average day, we'd spend about half the day, 3 or 4 hours rehearsing in the quartet, and then the remaining part of the workday teaching our students.
For you, Joseph, the world of being a student, the experience of being a learner, is not so far past. You've transitioned.
No, not at all. Not at all. I consider it going on as we speak, and certainly continuing for the rest of my life. That's something I think for me that's very important, even though I happen to be in the capacity of being a teacher. But for me, it's a sharing of knowledge that doesn't simply go in one direction. And I know I learned so much in the process of teaching. I hardly consider it just just an imparting of knowledge, but also a gaining of knowledge.
As someone who values knowledge, to join a group with an institutional memory, as it were, that
yes,
goes back so far, you must have sort of greedily looked at this as, my gosh, I can be so close to people who not only performed the music, but had the music written at the very time they were performing,
right,
rubbed elbows
right
with the composers, all of that.
Yeah, that, I mean, I think that's true to a certain extent, and yet, well, there's two things. The nature of an ethos of this group is such that it's constantly welcoming new ideas and really working in the moment, not resting on its laurels, not always looking back at, you know, patting itself institutionally on the back at what we've done, but in the moment of making music alive and anew each time, whether in rehearsal or performance, and in the process of bringing in new members, the new perspectives that are brought in are as important as the ones that have been part of this long tradition that the quartet has. And therefore, I suppose in a kind of reverse way, whereas, yes, absolutely, as a new younger member coming into such an established ensemble, one feels that one only has things to learn and not necessarily much to offer from a certain perspective. But just like as I was speaking earlier, for in my capacity as a teacher, it really does go both ways. And I think in this quartet, even relatively fresher perspectives are welcome, and welcome as equally valid in the act of music making, in the act of bringing music to life. That music does not, should not become ossified just because there already has been decades or centuries of a tradition. And thank God that it can be made anew each time. And so I'm grateful for that being the case in this quartet. It's a really mutual dialogue that goes in every direction.
What season is the Juilliard Quartet currently in?
It's in its 70th season as an ensemble.
I know you joined the quartet in 2011. There's a newer member still?
Yes, there's about to be a yet newer member still than the first one after me. Our violist, Roger Tapping, joined in the fall of 2013. So this is currently his third season. And then this season is also a celebration of our longtime cellist, 42nd and final season in the quartet, that cellist being Joel Krosnick. And so after this season, that is after this summer, we will be welcoming into the quartet a new cellist, and her name is Astrid Schwein. She'll be joining us in earnest starting in the fall.
So this concert on Friday is one of Joel's last performances.
Yeah, he's got a couple of months left. He wants to make it clear that there have been many unfortunate misunderstandings that such and such a performance is his last concert. And of course, he really hanging on to every last bit that he can get, wants to make it clear that it's not over until so. But it's in his last season, and it's a very special season as a result.
Reports of my retirement have been greatly exaggerated. Joseph, could we talk a little bit more about what having an association with the Juilliard School means? Does it allow you to have a little more of an academic bent in your programming, or a risk-taking bent in your programming, rather than having to rely on, pleasing audiences with surefire programs that are easily digestible?
Yes, I think that's a good point. You're right, and for two reasons. I suppose there's the simple practical reason that kind of freedom that having, in this case, a salaried position at a school takes some of the pressure off of programming, simply programs, as you call them, surefire programs, or programs that are obviously going to sell. So we can take the risk in trying to balance our programming with very well-known established works of the repertoire, but also taking the risk to introduce new pieces or pieces that, not new, but do deserve another hearing and another effort at bringing them to the public, because our livelihoods don't depend entirely upon selling our concerts, so to speak. And then there is the identity of being affiliated with an institution like Juilliard, that, and perhaps the identity of the quartet has, or it did quickly evolve into one that prided itself in bringing not only the established masterpieces, but new works, and the school fully supporting that. And therefore, in a way, it's expected that the Juilliard Quartet is not just offering chestnuts to its public, but a real balance of things that can be immediately enjoyed, and others that take attentive listening, some digestion, maybe another listening, maybe further exploration. And it's wonderful that we can have that balance.
Why don't we start first then with this Richard Wernick piece, which is actually second on the program, but since we're talking about groundbreaking music, new composers, I wondered if you'd give us an introduction to the piece we're going to hear on Friday.
Sure. Richard Wernick is somebody who's had a long relationship, working and personal, with the quartet. As he pointed out to us, this being his ninth quartet, that all of his odd-numbered quartets, I think he doesn't include the first one, perhaps, which may be earlier work. But in any case, he says that all of his odd-numbered quartets were written for the Juilliard Quartet, including this one, the ninth quartet. It's a work in two movements. The descriptive title of the first movement is Assertive Aggressive. And then the second movement has an Italian title, and I believe that reads Per una selva oscura, which I think translates into something like Through a Hidden Forest.
As someone who has listened and performed thousands of hours of music, you know that composers each have sort of the signature that you can eventually discern if you've been exposed to enough of their music. Even if you haven't heard that piece before, you can almost pick it out. What are some of the signature things to you about Richard Wernick?
Well, I would say that certainly in the first movement, you have the leaping gestures, often leaping an interval that would be considered quite strident. That is a major minor seventh. So not quite making it to the octave, not quite making it to something that just rings easily or resonates easily, but something that if you were to play that those two notes simultaneously would be harsh and abrasive. And leaping that interval is that kind of defiant step. And I think that's a signature of at least some of Wernick's music.
What is it that helps you know that Mozart is Mozart, which is, by the way, the composer who you'll start with a program with?
Yes, yeah. Well, one might not hear that right at the opening of this piece. I've mentioned the word dissonant, and as maybe some of our audiences will know, and they'll see it in the program probably, the nickname for the Mozart piece we're playing is the Dissonance Quartet. And that comes from its very opening, its introduction to the first movement. It in fact presents a rather strange harmonic probing, with no clear, easy resolution for quite a while, passing through at least temporary dissonances. So your question, well, what is it that would tell somebody this is Mozart? At the very opening, maybe not much. And interestingly, that effect, that repeated note ostinato effect that Wernick uses in his second movement, in fact, Mozart uses at this opening, creating that sense of mystery. So the repeated notes are in the cello, and then around it are introduced other pitches that, as they get layered on top of each other, it's a slow progression, and you see these clashes emerging in front of your eyes or ears, and then they really do collide with these pitches that you don't naturally experience in Mozart, and then they sort of, that collision dissolves a moment later, yet only to reform again into another dissonant moment, and about a minute of this unfolds, of this strange mysterious opening unfolds, until a cadence on the dominant, and then in C major, the most beautiful, natural, and glorious Allegro movement. Very pure in its expression, building on some of the most simple ways to create melodies, stepwise motion. In this case, the theme uses, you know, small steps, like as if you were going up a scale, and gentle appoggiaturas. That's a Mozartian trademark, I would say.
Finally, the concert will end with the string quartet in G minor by Claude Debussy. He went on to, I think, further develop his so-called impressionistic techniques, his whole tone scales and this sense of gestural forms. But this quartet shares a lot in common with more of the romantic style, too. So maybe this isn't the easiest way to identify the composer through the string quartet.
Well, it being one of his more popular pieces as a work and its recognizability, certainly in chamber music circles, one would recognize Debussy in it. And while he went on to perhaps continue developing his voice, in this work, one really senses Debussy emerging into his own voice, if not already establishing it. And I would say, while expressively it has a lot that one would consider a romantic type of expression, its use of harmony and structure, or its expanding of traditional concepts of harmonic possibility, structural possibility, definitely pushes well beyond the romantic period. I imagine, and maybe there's documentation to support what I imagine were reactions to this work, and still somewhat historically in the romantic period, the tail end of it, 1892, 1893, not even the 20th century. And a piece like this to appear at that time when Debussy was just coming out of his student days, I believe. I can only imagine the reactions of his, let's say, his the people who are senior to him, his teachers, people established in the music world at the time. And at every turn in the piece, I would say, especially harmonically, I can imagine people saying, Claude, you can't do that. How could you do that? That just doesn't work. You're not allowed to do that by the established rules of the day, harmonic progression, et cetera, et cetera. He really broke many rules in this piece, and it's a piece that's so beloved, at least among quartet players and chamber music fans, that we almost take its innovation for granted, but I think it's incredibly innovative.
Well, I'm so glad that Juilliard Quartet will be sharing this program with us on Friday at Stetson Chapel in a Fontana concert. Finally, Joseph, you have plenty on your plate, all of you do, teaching and performing in, you know, New York. What is the quartet's case? What is the case for pulling up stakes and going on tour and coming to various cities, some with established classical audience and some without established classical music audiences?
I think sharing music one way or another is so much of what we do and want to do. And we're so happy to be able to do it. And sometimes the gratification comes from audiences who are more familiar with us and our work. And oftentimes the even greater gratification and satisfaction comes from bringing it to audiences with whom we are less familiar, and a new relationship is established. I don't know about the quartet's history with Kalamazoo. I presume it's been there on at least a few occasions in the past, but not since I've joined in. So we're really looking forward to coming back if the quartet has been there before, and sharing our music and our love for what we do in Kalamazoo.
Well, thank you so much. So nice to talk to you, Joseph.
Likewise. Thank you, Kara.
I spoke with Joseph Lin, violinist of the Juilliard String Quartet, which performs Friday night on the Fontana series.